For the next 30 minutes, welcome to Old Testament Prophets with your host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In a moment, Father Pacwa.
Shalom Aleichem. The peace of God be with you all. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. And we've been talking about the role of the prophets and the kings. And today, I want to talk about a very special prophet, Elijah the Tishbite. Now, there was one woman, when I said that to her, a nice southern lady, she wanted to slap me. She wasn't sure she should slap me for saying Elijah the Tishbite, but that's the man's name, so don't make too much fun of it. Now, to understand Elijah, let me give just a little bit more background of what happened right before the time of Elijah the Tishbite. Okay? First of all, we've left off with King Asa, who was the grandson of Rehoboam, and he was the king of Judah. And he was pretty good. The only problem that we have with Asa is toward the end of his life, somewhere in the 870s or so. Okay? Around the 870s. We're not sure exact date when the trouble started, but he was having a lot of trouble with the king that we also left off with in the north, Baasha. And Baasha had started to attack and build forts down along the border of Judah. So Asa took money from the temple, silver from the temple, and sent it up to Damascus, to the king of the Arameans, and paid them to attack King Baasha of the north kingdom of Israel. And so the Syrians, glad to get the money, and glad for an opportunity to attack Baasha, went down there. Well, Baasha had to go up to his northern borders, and the king of Judah, Asa, went down from the south and took apart all the forts that Baasha had made. But he had not done what was right. It was very practical, and it seemed to work, but it was wrong. And so, Hanani the seer. Remember, that's one of the words for a prophet, Jose. And it's a word that comes from the south. And Hanani the seer, as we see in the second book of Chronicles, chapter 16, says this. He tells King Asa, "You have done wrong." Now, King Asa had done right before this, but now he did wrong. And for that, he would have no more peace in his kingdom. And there were wars that continued after that. Well, King Asa had gotten so bad that he turned even more hard-hearted to the ways of the Lord, and he put Hanani the seer in prison. And then that ends that, and there's wars after this in the reign of Asa. Now that's Asa. Let's go up to the northern kingdom and see what happens there. We see that Baasha fights off the Arameans, the people from Damascus, and he goes back to his own capital at Tirzah, and he lives there, but he dies and gets buried with his ancestors, and his son becomes the next king. However, what we see here with the king Baasha and his son is that his son is not so popular, and perhaps even Baasha was not so popular. And his son, Elah, who reigns from somewhere around 886 until 885, just a year or so, maybe not even that long, he gets assassinated by one of the servants. See what's happening up in the north? How many assassinations take place up there? And he was assassinated by a man named Zimri. And this is found in the first book of Kings. So go back to Kings, chapter 16, verse 8 and following. And the reason for this assassination of Elah, the son of Baasha, the king of the north, is this. Jehu, the son of Hanani, was a prophet. And this Jehu, the son of Hanani, had prophesied that Baasha would lose his family. His family would not stay on the throne and that they would be taken away from him because they did not do what was right with God. And Baasha himself had taken the throne through revolution. And so he lost, in a way, through his son. His son Ela was killed and assassinated in fulfillment of the prophecy of Jehu, the son of Hanani. And what, one of the things I'm not sure, but I think, is that this Jehu, the son of Hanani, is perhaps the son of the same Hanani who had prophesied against Asa, perhaps just a few years later. Well, anyway, this we're still getting up to the story of poor Mr. Elijah. What happened next? The army was with a man named Omri, General Omri. And Omri was fighting against Philistines. And the people wanted him to be the king. And so there was a little revolution, a little civil war, and another general fought against him. But Omri won. And Omri did great things in Israel in terms of practical politics and economics. He was a great economic success. He made all kinds of alliances. He made alliances with the king of Tyre and Sidon. He made alliances with the king of Aram, the king of Damascus. He had all kinds of trade agreements. He would sell grain, wine, and oil to these other kings, and they would ship it out to other countries. He also built many forts, as we know, and he also conquered the people of Moab. And we know that not from the Bible. The Bible doesn't tell us all that because the Bible writers did not like Omri. But we know from records in the kings nearby that he was very successful and a very good general, very smart. But then eventually, as everybody else does, Omri died. No matter how much wealth you've got and how much power and how clever you are, you still got to die. And so he does. And his place is taken by Ahav, or we call him Ahab in English. But in Hebrew, it's Ahav, which means father, brother. Or brother, father, actually. Ach means brother. Av means father. And he, you know, became the next king. Now, one of the things that Omri had done was build the city of Samaria, Shomron in Hebrew. And Ahab, or Ahav, takes over Shomron, or Samaria, as his capital. And that stays the capital of the north for the next 150 years. And Ahab is married to Jezebel. Now, in movies and literature, you can see that some women are even called Jezebels. The word probably means, where is Zebul? That is, where is the prince Baal? Okay? So Jezebel was from the place of Tyre. Her father was the king there. And Jezebel worshipped Baal and the goddess Asherah. And the same thing happened to Ahab as happened to Solomon and Rehoboam. That they married foreign women and they began to be influenced by the foreign gods. Ahab is influenced by the worship of Baal, the god of fertility, and Asherah, the goddess of fertility. And as a matter of fact, Jezebel is a woman who has a lot of vim and vigor, and she has a lot of, you know, drive and evangelism for this Baal, the god of fertility, and Asherah. She has her own prophets of these gods. Now, this causes trouble for Israel's religion. And we're going to come back in just a minute to see how Elijah the Tishbite comes into this situation. So stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking about how prophets influenced the history of Israel's kings and how prophets saw to the raising up and the bringing down of dynasties in the north and the bringing of warfare and peace in the south, depending on whether the people and the kings especially obeyed the word of the Lord. And now we've seen how in the north the dynasty of Omri is started, and Omri dies and his son Ahab inherits a very prosperous kingdom. And part of the prosperity is to marry the daughter of a king to the west, a daughter named Jezebel, who is very pro-Baal. And at this time, the king Ahab becomes very consciously and forthrightly influenced by Baal, and the god of fertility. And he even builds a shrine to Baal in Samaria, his own capital. And so the Lord speaks to Elijah the Tishbite. Now Tishbe was a city. And Tishbe is a city in Gilead, that is, on the east side of the Jordan. And it's a wild country. There's not much water, it's nearly desert. And in that wild country, a man has a lot of time to be alone with the Lord. Sure, he's far away from the sanctuary, but he's still close to God. And he's also raised in the traditions of the ancestors, the traditions about being faithful and true to God. And so Elijah is able to respond to God when he speaks. And he said, Elijah says, "As Yahweh lives, Chai Yahweh, the God of Israel whom I serve, there shall be neither dew nor rain these years except at my order." In other words, unless I, Elijah, the prophet of God, speaks, there will be no more rain or even dew. Now, this is incredible because Baal was the god of the rainstorm. Baal was a god with lightning bolts. He would send down and hurl down a people and bring rain upon the earth and fertility. And now Elijah says, "Oh yeah, you're going to worship that God, huh? Think you're wise guys, eh? Well, what you're going to do is you're not going to have any rain because you worship the God of the rain. Because Yahweh is in charge of everything." And so then the word of Yahweh came to him and says, "Go from here, go eastwards, and hide yourself at the Wadi Charit, which lies east of the Jordan. You can drink from the stream, and I have ordered the ravens to bring you food there." And he did as Yahweh said. So Elijah is going to be taken care of by Yahweh, who shows him where to get water in a stream. A wadi is a stream on the east side of the Jordan. And that ravens, who will be going around picking off meat from the dead animals, from dead cows and things that are going to suffer from the great drought. And they're going to bring that meat over to Elijah. And he'll be nourished and fed by Yahweh's providence. But then after a while, we see that the wadi runs dry, and so he goes over to Zarephath, a city of Sidon. And there, he's to stay with the widow. And Yahweh says to him, specifically, "Up, go to Zarephath, a Sidonian town, and stay there. I have ordered a widow there to give you food." Now, the word "order" does not mean he told the widow to do this. It's a word that means prepare, arach. And so he went. Elijah is somebody who not only speaks the word of Yahweh, but he also obeys the word of Yahweh. And so when he reaches the city gate, there was the widow, just like Yahweh had said, gathering sticks. He spoke to her and said, "Please bring a little water in a vessel for me to drink." So he wants water. He's thirsty. There's a drought going on. And she was setting off to bring the water. When he called after her, "Please," he said, "bring me a scrap of bread in your hand, or a little round loaf." And then she says, and listen to this, she says, "As Yahweh your God lives." She speaks in the name of Yahweh, the God of Israel, instead of Baal, her own God, the God of her own country, Sidon. And she said, "I have no baked bread, but only a handful of meal in a jar and a little oil in a small jug." The word "jug" is about one pint. It's just a little oil in this pint jug and a little bit of flour in a jar, about a 2-quart jar. "I'm just gathering a stick or two to go prepare this for myself and my son to eat, and then we shall die." She has no hope. And as a matter of fact, besides Baal, the god of fertility, there was also the god Mot, the god of death. And she said, "Therefore we'll go to Mot, we'll go to death." And Elijah says to her, "Do not be afraid, go and do as you have said. But first, make a little loaf or a little piece of bread for me and bring it to me. Then make some for yourself. For thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, jar of meal shall not be spent, jug of oil shall not be emptied before the day when Yahweh sends rain on the face of the earth." He speaks a little poem to her. Yahweh frequently speaks through his prophets in poems. And this is one of the first of those poems. And he says that you will not suffer want. If you trust Yahweh, if you trust the Lord and trust my word and feed me, you'll be taken care of. Don't trust Baal. Don't trust this God of fertility who you and your people say brings the grain, the wine, and the oil. But trust Yahweh because he's the one who has the power to bring grain, wine, oil, nourishment. He'll take care of us. Miraculously, he'll take care of us. And the wonderful thing is, this pagan woman believes in Yahweh's word and goes ahead and makes the bread and gives it to Elijah, and then it comes true. The word of Yahweh comes true. That this woman does as Elijah said, and she is more faithful than the king of Israel. And then the next story is, right afterwards it happened that the son of this woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick. And his illness was so severe that in the end there was no breath left in him. And he died. And the woman complains, "Did you come here to bring me trouble? Isn't that bad enough? I'm a widow. Now my son dies?" And Elijah says to her to trust in God. And so he says, "Give me your son." And so he took the son into an upper room. And he cried out, he screamed to Yahweh, "Yahweh, my God, do you mean to bring grief to the widow who is looking after me by killing her son?" So even he cries out. And Yahweh heard the prayer of Elijah, and the soul of the child returned to him and revived. Elijah took the child and brought him down and gave him to his mother. And look, his son is alive. And it's one of the things about Baal is that Baal was a god who the people believed died and rose again. Every year they believed that. In the fall he died and all the trees died with him. And in the spring he rose again and all the trees came back to life. And so they believed that Baal was the resurrection and the life. But Elijah says no. Yahweh, the God of Israel, is the resurrection and the life. He is the one that gives you life. He gives you food you need. He gives you the oil to make your bread. He even gives life back to your son. Now the career of Elijah goes on. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute to continue talking about Elijah. Welcome back. We're talking about Elijah the Tishbite. Elijah, the man from Tishbe in Gilead, east of the Jordan. And in opposition to King Ahab, who has begun to worship the god of his wife Jezebel, that is the god Baal, the god of fertility, the god of rain, Elijah has spoken in the name of Yahweh that there will be no rain or dew and no fertility until Yahweh speaks. But now it's time. And so it says in chapter 18 of 1 Kings, "A long time went by, and the word of Yahweh came to Elijah in the third year. Go and present yourself to Ahab, Achav. I'm about to send down rain on the land." So Elijah went off to present himself to Ahab. And what happens is that he goes up and he meets one of the servants of Ahab, a man named Obadiah, and tells Obadiah, "I want to see Ahab." And so they meet. And then what he does is he challenges, that is, Elijah challenges Ahab and says, "Look, I want to challenge the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah, the goddess of fertility, those 850 prophets altogether who eat at the table of Jezebel, your wife, who worships Baal and Asherah. I want to have a duel with them. We're going to have dueling prophets here. And what we're going to have is I want to meet with them up on Carmel." Now, Carmel is a beautiful place. It is magnificent. And it's right on the sea, of the Mediterranean Sea. And it's a high mountain overlooking the Mediterranean Sea. And they meet up there. And we have this situation of dueling prophets. Now, how is the duel to go? Elijah says to the prophets of Baal, look, first of all, he addresses the people and says, look, worship Yahweh or worship Baal, make up your mind, but stop sitting on the fence. Just like we see the Lord say in the book of Revelation, be hot, be cold, but if you're lukewarm, I'm going to spit you out of my mouth. I can't stand that lukewarmness. And so he asked the people to make up their mind for Yahweh or against him, just like Joshua had done in Joshua 24. And then he calls these prophets of Baal and says to them, in verse 25 and 26, choose one bull and begin, for there are more of you. Call on the name of your God, but light no fire. That is, he says, build an altar, choose a bull, put it on there, slaughter it, and we'll wait for some fire to come down. And whosoever God brings down the fire to burn up this sacrifice, that's the true God. And the prophets of Baal say, sure, why not? As they should, because Baal is the god of lightning and thunder and rainstorm. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the statues of Baal that have been found in some pictures have him with lightning rods in his hand. And he'd be shaking these lightning rods to throw down on the earth. And so, he should be able to bring some fire down on the earth. And so we see here that the prophets of Baal start singing around. They start dancing. They sort of start hopping around. And they start singing and dancing and getting louder and louder. And then at around noontime, Elijah starts having a little fun with them. He starts to mock them. He says, hey, you prophets, call a little bit louder. Because Baal is a god. He is preoccupied. Or he's busy. Maybe he turned off aside. The Hebrew word means he turned aside. Okay? That's what it says literally. What it means, though, that's an idiom for saying, maybe he's in the bathroom. Maybe he can't hear you because he got the door shut. Now, you people call Baal the god of thunder. Maybe he makes all that thunder while he's in the bathroom. So, he's, you know, just call a little bit louder. Maybe he can't hear you. Or maybe he went off on a journey. Maybe he's asleep. You got to wake him up. So, Elijah is having fun with them, saying that their god's in bed, their god's in the bathroom, and all this other foolishness. And so they believe him. They started louder. They're yelling, hey, Baal, yo, Baal. You just keep yelling louder and louder. So much so they take pieces of broken pottery and they start to gash themselves because they would go then into blood frenzy and they would gash themselves all over themselves and blood is all over the place. Nothing happens. There was no voice, no answer, no response was given to them. So then Elijah said to the people, come closer to me. And all the people came closer to him. And he repaired the altar of Yahweh, which had been broken down. He took 12 stones, one for each tribe of Israel. And it's to whom Yahweh had come. Israel is your name. And he built an altar in the name of Yahweh. And around the altar he dug a trench. And he put water all over his offering, all over the bull and all over the wood. And he told them, put more water, and put it again. Fill these jars with water and pour it all over. So that the whole trench was full of water. The whole altar and the sacrifice was all soaked down. Everything was wet. And then, as we see in chapter 18, verse 36, Elijah prays. He says, Yahweh, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let them know today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, that I have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Yahweh, answer me, so that this people may know that you, Yahweh, are God, and are winning back their hearts. That's the whole purpose of this, so the people can know that Yahweh is God, and so that Yahweh can win back the hearts of the people. And then the fire of Yahweh fell and consumed the holocaust, that is, the bull, and the wood, and licked up the water in the trench. So even the water was all taken away, all burned up. Everything was taken up by the fire of Yahweh. And then the people fell on their faces in fear. I mean, I'd be scared too if I saw all this fire coming down from heaven to consume all this wet stuff. When the Baal prophets had done all this, they're dancing around and gashing and calling for Baal, and nothing happened to them. But now the fire does come when Elijah gives a simple prayer. I'd be scared too. They fall on their faces. And a lot of times that's where you and I belong, on our faces before God. And then they cry out, Yahweh Elohim, Yahweh Elohim. Yahweh is God, Yahweh is God. And then Elijah said, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. He seized them, and Elijah took them to the Wadi Kishon, and he slaughtered them there. The false prophets are all killed and slaughtered one by one. And then the next scene is that Elijah goes to the top of the mountain, and he sees out there a cloud the size of a fist, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And just as Yahweh had said to him, the rain comes, and a great storm, and the drought ends. But the drought ends not because of the power of nature, not because of the power of Baal, not because of Asherah, but because of the prophet's word. The prophet had spoken the word of Yahweh. He gave it to the people, and the word came true. Let us be a people that believes the word of God, that trusts in our God beyond nature or anything else, and serves our God and our God alone. God bless you.
Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession, was left unaided. Inspired with this confidence, I fly to thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee I come, before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not my petitions in my necessity, but in thy mercy, hear and answer me. Amen.